What would you do if you sensed something dark and malevolent in your home? Mark Clark found himself in exactly this situation, convinced a demonic presence haunted his rental house. When a pastor he'd never met visited and accurately described the house layout, pinpointing where they, without any prior knowledge, it confirmed Clark's suspicions. This unsettling encounter frames the central argument. We inhabit two intersecting realities, the spiritual and the everyday, and both converge in one figure, Jesus of Nazareth. But here's the problem. We've domesticated Jesus into a harmless motivational speaker, a first century life coach dispensing wisdom about kindness. The real Jesus? He was scandalous, disruptive, and fundamentally threatening to anyone comfortable with the status quo. This isn't religious propaganda. It's historical investigation meeting philosophical depth, addressing the hardest questions skeptics ask while refusing easy answers. Before discussing what Jesus taught, we need to settle whether he existed at all. Jesus's historical existence is virtually undisputed amongst serious scholars, including critics like Bart Ehrman. Three evidence streams converge. First, at least 10 non-biblical writers, including first-century Jewish and Roman historians hostile to Christianity, mention Jesus. Tacitus, the Babylonian Talmud, and Josephus corroborate a Jewish teacher believed to perform miracles, crucified under Pontius Pilate, whose followers worshipped him as divine. Second, the Gospels demonstrate historical reliability through specific names and family relations suggesting eyewitness testimony. Their subtle discrepancies enhance credibility. Authentic witnesses remember core events identically but differ on peripheral details. Third, early Christians endured brutal persecution for their claims. People don't willingly suffer horrific deaths for fabricated figures. Born in Bethlehem but raised in rural Nazareth, Jesus never traveled far, held office, wrote books, married, or attended college. Yet this marginal figure profoundly reshaped history. Understanding him requires his first-century Jewish context. Selecting 12 disciples deliberately reconstituted Israel around himself. His baptism and 40-day wilderness temptation reenacted Israel's exodus. But where Israel failed, Jesus succeeded. He positioned himself as Israel in person, turning purification water into wine, declaring himself the true temple, presenting himself as bread in the desert, light of the world, true vine. These deliberate statements show Jesus bringing Israel's story to climactic fulfillment. Central to his ministry was the kingdom of God, appearing 122 times in the Gospels, not about going to heaven when we die, but God's reign breaking into the world through forgiveness, defeat of evil, and restoration. Many cherished biblical passages, the doxology in the Lord's Prayer, details of the Christmas story, may not have been originally spoken by Jesus or accurately portrayed in tradition. Does this undermine the gospel's trustworthiness? Not if we've been reading them correctly. The Gospels are best understood as theological history, blending Greek-style biography with Jewish prophetic storytelling. They combine accurate historical reporting with engaging narrative techniques to present Jesus' life, teachings, and significance. Unlike modern biographies, Gospel writers arranged material topically rather than chronologically, abbreviated speeches, and selected content serving their theological purposes. To evaluate historical reliability, four criteria apply: apostolicity, written during the apostolic age; embarrassment, details creating difficulty for the early church; discontinuity, words or deeds that can't be derived from contemporary Judaism or early church teachings; and multiple attestations, confirmed across sources. The criterion of embarrassment is particularly compelling. Why include Jesus' baptism by John, implying he needed forgiveness? Why record Jesus not knowing the exact time of the end or attempting to avoid his mission at Gethsemane? These details wouldn't appear if fabricating mythology. The Gospels present reliable accounts precisely because they preserve uncomfortable truths alongside triumphant claims. Many accept Jesus as an inspiring teacher, but reject him as Lord. This is discipleship scandal. Unlike advertisers promising easier living, Jesus demands, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." This command contradicts our culture's obsession with self-discovery. While society screams, "Find yourself," Jesus subverts this impulse, knowing that seeking fulfillment in spouses, children, work, or wealth never satisfies. "Take up his cross daily" references Roman execution instruments. Jesus invited followers to join the true empire under his lordship rather than Caesar's. Like seeds dying to produce fruit, we must die to ourselves. "Follow me" is most important. Who you follow determines everything. "Disciple" appears 269 times in the New Testament, "Christian" only 3 times. This discipleship is intentionally difficult, which is why many turned back. The solution? Renew commitment daily, one decision at a time. Jesus' central teaching was, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." Yet loving God is surprisingly neglected in modern Christianity. Jesus wanted our affections, our hearts, not merely outward observance. Our relationship with God should be a love affair, not intellectual belief. The scandal. We must transfer our deepest affections from whatever currently occupies them to God. Humans have infinite capacity to love, but directing it toward finite things destroys us. When a man enthusiastically volunteered to follow Jesus, Christ responded, "The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head," directly challenging his idol of comfort and security. Modern Christianity often lacks a category for radical obedience, preferring safety over discipleship. To truly love God, we must see him as our ultimate treasure, not just for his blessings, but for himself. The gospel's purpose is to bring us to God, not merely to heaven. Satan himself believes the facts about Jesus, but isn't saved because he doesn't treasure Christ. People reject Christ not from lack of evidence, but because they love the darkness rather than the light. Many reject Christianity due to distrust of miracles, assuming science has disproven them. This view crumbles under scrutiny. Scientific laws aren't immutable, they're human interpretations. Newton's laws were considered absolute until Einstein contradicted them. Believers in miracles don't deny natural laws. They say these rules can be suspended given sufficient cause. Quantum theory, founded on uncaused events, has revolutionized what's possible. Naturalism is philosophical precommitment, not scientific conclusion. Harvard biologist Richard Lewontin admitted scientists prefer naturalistic explanations because of a prior commitment to materialism. They cannot allow a divine foot in the door. Evidence for Jesus performing miracles is overwhelming. 31% of Mark's gospel deals with miracles, and even non-Christian sources like the Talmud and Josephus acknowledge Jesus as a worker of amazing deeds. Jesus' miracles weren't merely compassion, but signs pointing to deeper realities, announcements that God's kingdom was breaking through. When John the Baptist questioned if Jesus was truly the awaited one, Jesus pointed to his healings as fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy. Jesus' crucifixion is documented by non-Christian historians like Josephus. Rome executed him after illegal trials and brutal flogging, soldiers tearing flesh with metal-embedded whips. Crucifixion meant nailing victims with 5 to 7 inch spikes displayed naked publicly. The word excruciating literally means out of the cross. Gospel writers positioned his death during Passover's ninth hour, precisely when Jews offered sin sacrifices. Jesus declared he came to give his life as a ransom for many. The resurrection's historical evidence is compelling. 5 evidences support this: medical confirmation of death, the missing body Rome couldn't produce, hundreds claiming to see him alive, the empty tomb with grave clothes, and the early church's unprecedented rise. Christianity exploded from 12 disciples to 33 million in 350 years, an unsolved mystery for any historian who refuses to take seriously the only explanation offered by the church itself, resurrection. Jesus won't be reduced to inspirational quotes. He demands everything, your comfort, idols, your very life, while offering himself. The resurrection proves his claims weren't delusions, but reality breaking through. The question isn't whether Jesus existed or what he taught, it's will you follow him? Not just believe about him, but actually follow, denying yourself, taking up your cross daily. Who you follow is the single most important thing about you.